everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. I was on a break yesterday. I needed to rest. It's exhausting, this whole conversing with a woman thing that I'm doing in my life, preparation for insemination. It got me tired. I have to say, I thought I was done with this. Not that it's particularly displeasant, but holy shit, it is something to have to entertain social interactions. I'm happy to do it, but it gets me exhausted, I have to say. You know, adding this on top of my already super busy schedule, it's a lot to think about for an anxious mind like me. I like to have the least amount of possible things to think about in my day, and that's one more thing. Hard to melt, bring more heat, she will melt like chocolate. Yes, this whole statue burning that they've done is quite telling about the current state of society. We saw the Robert Healy statue that was at the center of the whole Charlottesville protest. It's now been subject, you know, to the whole Charlottesville story, was taken by the leftist, and now has been melted this week, and they made a whole show of filming it and showing us the burning. I'll pull the video here just to show you guys. But it's kind of an error that the leftists are doing in elevating this symbol, because you just took, you know, I would have never heard of Robert E. Lee in my entire life if it wasn't of the leftist obsession with it. And now they've elevated the thing to a meme, I would say. They have transformed what would be an unknown person to me into a meme. Look at them burning it right here, dismantling the little pieces as they fall. The symbol of white supremacy. The symbol that had no particular reason to be a symbol of that, but because of the circumstances of life, ended up being the great symbol of white supremacy. Ladies and gentlemen, the Robert E. Lee statue. Melted, dismantled. Little piece of metal by little piece of metal. But the fact that they filmed it that way will actually immortalize Robert E. Lee into a meme. I mean, here's a guy. Imagine if I told you Nicolas Petrus. Nicolas Petrus, I challenge you to find a way so that your face is still bright red and shining over all of humanity in 200 years from now. It's basically impossible. What Robert E. Lee has accomplished here is he has subverted entropy. Here he is shining over us, the patriarch, the original patriarch of America. He is still alive, still on fire. And on top of it, they put the smoking effect. Oh my God, this is epic. Epic. But yeah, there are things that are too hard to melt. And to the people who think that they have taken over our civilization, and they are kind of right, the leftists have taken over, the minorities are rising and are taking over control of our society. But there are lots of things that you're going to have a hard time melting. The shining of the past days in which our nations were demographically homogeneous will be very hard to... It will be very hard for you guys to hide this, to hide how much better life was before our societies were taken over by leftists. Those are things you won't be able to put in a foundry. And in a way, the current state of civilization is very comfortable for white people. We will have all of these people who will start claiming that, oh my God, they're doing things so much better, and it's so much better with female leaders and with minority leaders. They're going to take control of everything. They're going to exclude us from the public space. But at the same time, the responsibility will now fall onto their shoulders for everything bad that happens. It's a two-way street. You can't take responsibility and claim that your control over society is so desirable and then not stand with the bad moves that you're going to do. And I believe that our society will be more and more bad. We will have crises of competency. I can't wait for planes to become untrustable. You know? I can't wait to be sitting back like a couch coach, you know, the people who criticize sports from their couch. I can't wait to be criticizing everything that will go to shit in this world when it's not controlled by white people. And so I don't take the burning of the Robert E. Lee statue as a sad event. I think it's a bright event because I think we will all be relieved to see the failure that society becomes when we are excluded from it. Chuck Garrity says it's going to get incredibly interesting. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like everything that is ascribed to the patriarchy or the white patriarchy is actually all things of necessity. And that is what the leftists don't understand. It's not in our nature as white men to have wanted things one way or another. It's just that there are things that are better this way, and we've set society that way because it was the only way to preserve a good society. When you start undoing what white people have done to our society, you will open society to all the weaknesses against which we wanted to protect it, including systematic crime and that kind of stuff. I mean, white people aren't even a minority yet, and it's already feeling like South Africa in here. So can you imagine when we're an actual minority by number? Unlucky Irish Chick says the alphabet mafia are just crazy. Are you talking about Google? Ariel Suarez says, I am very intrigued as to how the events in the next decades will unfold. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and the white people as scapegoat is going to be very hard to maintain credibly. It's a new thing right now, so it kind of passes, and I think it will still pass, and you'll still have people hanging to it for 10 years, maybe 20. But down the road, you won't be able to ascribe to white people the evils of society that are obviously committed by others. It's like, at some point, it's going to be a black criminal killed by a black cop, directed by a black director of cops, headed by a black president. And then we're going to be like, oh, so you do still need to shoot them, right? You do still need to shoot when your life is in danger. And this moment of Western civilization will be place for humor, comedy, standing back, sitting back, and saying, I told you so. It's going to be a massive societal, I told you so. Economic crisis sends a super chat, $10. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, finally get to catch you live sitting in Chiangai Airport. Enjoy your content, JF. Okay, I'll be careful about what I talk about because if my voice is too loud, if the security agents of the airport hear, oh my God, JF is talking about edgy stuff, you might get in trouble. So tonight will be family friendly, hopefully. DK Shadow says, no, JF, the effects of white supremacy are multi-generational. It will be white people's fault forever. Yeah, the thing is, that is said today. But they say it today. Can you imagine down the line one generation where everyone who ever got fucked by some corrupt agent or criminal, it was never a white person? Like, just out of the statistics, when white people are 10% of the population, it's going to be hard to resent a 10%, you know, unless white people don't take their place. But that is one of the beauty with whiteness. We are totally people who take their place. Like, we are not, I don't see us trying to invade unjustly another nation or even our nation after we've lost them. I don't see us trying to impose ourselves in the ways of the Jews. I don't see... As whites become a minority, I think they will accept their status of minority. Because I don't think we have it in us to solicit a higher influence than we should onto society. I think that's our big disadvantage, but it's also going to turn to be an advantage when it's time to play low profile. End of the line, Joel says, the 2010s decade demarcates when TV and film became permanently unwatchable. Demographic quotas ruined historical dramas and every other genre. Yeah, already we have a total mess with... There are stories, I just can't follow them. Like, I cannot watch the new Little Siren and... Black Siren or Black Mermaid or something like this. I can't. I'm not feeling it. I don't feel attached to the character. I'm not telling you that I would have watched it if it was a white mermaid, but at least there would have been a chance. You know, there would have been a chance for me to say, okay, I feel like the main character. I can empathize, but no, I cannot empathize with everyone replacing my people in Hollywood. Do not defend a random girl at the bar. Some people found this statement of mine controversial. There are some people who are telling me, no, JF, it's actually good to defend women from rape. What the fuck are you talking about? And I say no. I say we shouldn't defend women from rape. In a society where you had a legitimate shot at marriage and where chivalry could win you perhaps a good standing in the eyes of the female, perhaps in certain worlds that would have been viable. But in the world where, oh no, a woman don't owe you anything, even if they marry you after the fact, they still don't owe you anything. It's just not worth it. So I said the rule should be as follows. Do not defend a random girl at the bar unless she's pregnant with your baby, period. She will be the first to reject you after your disfiguration. So this poor guy, disfigured, defending a girl at a bar from a Moroccan Muslim who was trying to lace her drink with a substance. In a single fateful night, Tony B, 30, saw his life forever altered. On the eve of April 30, he encountered an act of violence that left him disfigured and robbed of his eyesight. What started as an act of bravery to protect a girl from a violent Moroccan Muslim migrant led to a brutal attack that changed his life irreversibly. Don't do it. Not worth it. The girl will not go out with you. You have been destroyed, you have undergone a cost, and ultimately our strategy as males should be to use this energy. So here's a source of energy, the Moroccan migrant. You can see it as an energy that you have to combat, in which case you hurt yourself, you have chances to die, you have chances to be handicapped forever, or you can cleverly recycle. See, think green. What can I do to use the energy of the Moroccan migrant for my own interest? Let the Moroccan migrant rape the girl. The girl will tell her friends, I got raped by a Moroccan migrant. Don't ever go out there without having your man beside you. And suddenly, poof, you have girls that are looking for males and you have an easier dating scene. As long as girls believe that they can do whatever they want in our society and they'll get carried for free through hitchhiking. They will get given money for anything they may need. They will be given protection by these Center for Battered Women. They will be not prosecuted by the police even when they commit crimes. As long as females have this guarantee in society, as long as there's no dangers out there, they will not love you. so you have to have a dangerous world to for love to take place. Just love out of the emotional drive of it does not happen. For the woman, she needs to be terrified. And ideally, you need to not be the guy who terrifies her, which is where my idea comes from. Let's buy alligators and repopulate our cities with alligators and moats. So every time they go away, they are in danger. End of the line, Joel says, Jeff, the size of the Muslim demonstrations in European towns and cities, is that continent lost? Where is the spirit of the Spanish Reconquista that drove the Muslims, Moors, out of Spain during the Middle Ages? I think that, yes, Europe is largely lost. I think there are certain countries like Sweden that actually might have a shot at reconquering, not because they're not as in a dire situation right now, they are just as much, but they are harder to conquer for the Muslim populations because the Muslim and African populations in general have a great difficulty living in the cold. So I think that ultimately it's going to boil down to the line of cold, cold winters. And I'm afraid that France, Spain don't have cold enough winters to make themselves uninteresting to this population. So it's going to boil down to this. I don't expect a Reconquista mindset to reinvigorate the European people. I think that we are kind of, we have grown too comfortable and into a post-military age. And I don't think that all of a sudden, you know, people are going to feel the need to push back. You're going to have local gangs maybe of white resistance, neo-Nazis, that kind of stuff. And they're going to try to make space in a very hostile world that grows more and more hostile against them. And they may be able to protect subsets of Europe here and there. But ultimately, if you ask long-term, what is my view of the viable long-term solution for white people, it will be a reconcentration in Nordic regions. We're going to have to use the cold to our advantage. And the more northern we can be, the more isolated we can be, the more protected we will be. Breathe a sigh of relief. Maine mass shooter dead after multi-day manhunt. So Robert Card has done a mass shooting where I believe 18 people have died, something along those lines. Maybe I've seen 22 also. Killing 18 people at a bar and bowling alley in Lewiston, Maine. I'd love to make a psychological profile of the guy. We just don't know much. So I would need... I don't think he was an ideological guy, so I might not be able to have more than what I will tell you today. I think it may be all we ever have about him. So what do we know about this guy? Well, we know he was a high IQ, well-organized, disciplined type of shooter that was a arms instructor that was also in the army as a reservist. And so this is the upright type of guy. We know that there were several interventions in his life where he was processed through the psychiatric system because he was starting to say weird things. He was starting to have delusions and making threats of shootings. Which is why I always say in these cases, what would have happened if we had let Robert Card alone? Because these interventions, these whole red flag laws and, oh, we're going to put him by force in a psychiatric hospital for a couple of days. The problem is we do this and we may be causing shootings at this point. No one is out there measuring, hey, are we causing shootings? Are we increasing the likelihood that someone will move to action because now he knows we're checking him? So we have this whole problem of a system that assumes that its interventions are useful. Can't be bad, right? He's just going to see a psychiatrist. Well, in the head of a schizophrenic, when you start forcing them into stuff, they will know that, oh my God, it's my last chance to commit the action because now they're checking me. Was he on psych meds, a shamrock shake? I don't know. They haven't said. I wouldn't be surprised that they tried, but very often with schizophrenia, 90% of the people with schizophrenia do not recognize that they have schizophrenia or that they need meds. So if they tried, I wouldn't be surprised that he eventually gave them up and stopped using them. So he was hearing voices. So normally a schizophrenia person, it's not going to be an ideological thing. Although people have digged into his past and they have seen some degree of interest in some politics, but it's very, very, tame, center-right type of stuff. Now, I'm sure that the leftists will look at, like, some speech by Donald Trump, maybe. And I haven't even verified if those were true, but there were claims on Twitter recently that he was looking at some Twitter accounts that were kind of Donald Trumpish, MAGA, Blaze TV levels of right-wing thinking, you know? So I don't think that it's a particular sign. I think it just pairs well with his upright military mentality. So here we have the upright shooter case, not someone who was rejected from society, not someone who was persecuted, you know, not like these geeks who come out having been bullied all high school, but a guy who was integrated in society, but who had schizophrenia. So when you have schizophrenia, you're going to imagine all sorts of scenarios, and some of them might be orders that he was hearing. He was hearing voices, and then after hearing voices, was threatening to shoot up a military base. So he probably had some conception of there's evil people out there and I have to take action against them. And it was probably linked to schizophrenia much more than ideology. Although sometimes the schizophrenic will introduce some ideological elements to their delusion. Valet says, expecting a schizophrenic to take their own medicine is a fantasy. They will flush it down the toilet and tell you they took it all when they go for a prescription refill. Absolutely. Shamrock Shake says, their voices typically tell them to go off the meds. That is one thing they can say, yes, but they can say quite a lot of things. A lot of child murdering by female schizophrenic and it is done under the premise of God told me to do so, you know. Cosmic Nut says, some schizophrenic will follow the meds schedule to the letter. It's if they stop due to carelessness. It's not just carelessness, let me tell you. In schizophrenia, there is a severe stubbornness against medication and a conviction, an internal conviction that they don't need it. Anyways, what can we do with this? The thing is, we do all these little psychiatric social worker interventions. It's not the right way to go. Perhaps we should have left him alone. Perhaps it wouldn't have precipitated him into thinking, oh my God, I have to take action now or they'll take my guns away. So what should we do? Well, we should continue having a society that doesn't allow pre-crime interventions. We're doing the exact contrary of what we need to do. We will need to be a society that doesn't scare people, that we have the means eventually to get to their children, to get to their guns, to get to anything that's a fundamental right. As long as we're constantly threatening these police intervention, wellness checks, social welfare visit, red flag laws for gun, we are telling to the schizophrenics of the next generation, you better do your shooting you know, in one straight, because if you start threatening, you're going to lose everything. So we are basically teaching violent people, you should shut up to the last minute. And that is very dangerous. That is very dangerous what we're doing. New guy says, you mean intruding on people's lives is bad? Yes. As I grew up in the age of Minority Report, I thought that this was a given, you know. In Minority Report, they don't explain why all of this is bad. They just assume that it's bad. See how bad it is, pre-crime? DK Shadow says, pre-crime without the three psychics. Yeah, it's quite amazing in Minority Report. I really don't like the fact that their pre-crime system relies on, like, bodies of humans maintained in water who are like, having visions. Like, the whole rest of the movie could be super well made, but this aspect is totally, like, I would have much preferred a central artificial intelligence. That would have been great. But like three bizarre precogs, that's how they call them, precogs. That kind of make the movie totally outside of the sci-fi and more into the psychological weirdness category. Israeli special forces apprehended and taken hostage by Hamas. Israel had an incursion into Gaza. It resulted in an Apache helicopter being called to help evacuate the Israeli troops. Hamas announced, tomorrow Abu Ubaidah will tell you what happened and who is in our hands. Hamas was apparently able to take an Israeli special force troop hostage. So yes, we had ground incursions by Israel. It looks like they want to chop a piece out of Gaza. It looks like colonialism to me, what's happening, because they scare the populations away, then they bomb the cities to the point of not being reusable or very hard to reconstruct, and then they send a ground invasion. Like, this all look like a planned program for invasion of Gaza. This doesn't look like a emergency response to, oh my God, we're getting kidnapped by Hamas. It looks like you just deployed a plan for war, guys. Like, be honest about it. I would give some respect, at least, if Benjamin Netanyahu was to come on TV and say, look, guys, we just want to colonize this place. We think it's a shit place. We think we can do better with it. Thank you. Bye-bye. That would have been much easier to me, because at least I could say, wow, some honesty here. You have to give it to him. But now you've all draped this into, oh, it's an operation to sicker ourselves from being attacked. Anyways, what we've seen is there is a popular uprising, of course, in Gaza. People have been deprived of their places of living. And we see lots of young men walking on the streets and apparently ready to join some form of resistance. Breaking, people in the West Bank have risen against the invasion of Gaza, from Tulkarem to Tubas and Ramallah to Al-Khalil. Palestinians have risen in defense of Gaza across the West Bank. They are chanting, Gaza will not kneel. That is definitely, I expected the whole population of Palestine to feel concerned and those who can fight to join a sort of fight. But then the question is, can they be properly equipped? Because if they're just men who don't have weapons, if they don't have all of the stuff needed, they will have very little value in combat against the invading Israeli army. So now it's a matter to me of equipment and infrastructure and capacity to support all this population. And there could be various forces at play here. We could think of deliveries from Iran, Russia, some by plane, some perhaps by boat, because Palestine has access to the sea. But then Israel is going to be very strong on the embargo. So There's a possibility that the only path might be some sort of tunnel systems coming from the north of Gaza. I don't know, maybe passing surreptitiously around the border with Syria, maybe toward Lebanon. But the question will be provisioning of this energetic young male population. Keith Woods says, Elon is right, and increasingly this conclusion is becoming unavoidable to any honest and reasonably intelligent person. Elon was saying they absolutely want our extinction. That was in response to the Lee name. Tad was saying, literally my ancestor, talking about the Robert E. Lee statue. We carry the Lee name as a first/middle name in my family. While I didn't need a directly insulting gesture to tell me that my kind is hated and many seek our extinction, the implicit cues were strong enough. I appreciate this image making it absolutely clear. That is fascinating that we have an Elon Musk today. Well, that was yesterday, this tweet. But it's quite fascinating to consider that Charlottesville was hated so hard by the left. Charlottesville was the center point on which the smearing of the Nick Fuentes of this world, the smearing of the Richard Spencer of this world, the whole association with Charlottesville has been so used by the left. And yet today we have a CEO of X, one of the richest person in the world, saying in response to the statue burning, they absolutely want your extinction. It's amazing from a baseness level, you know, because I knew a time on the internet where no one would touch the story of Charlottesville other than by saying, the deadly rally of Charlottesville, the neo-Nazi deadly rally of Charlottesville. And here we have one of the richest men in the world today in control of much speech on the internet saying they absolutely want your extinction. This guy knows. Not only does he know, but I wonder if he's been sympathetic to things like Charlottesville back in the days as it was happening. Like you have to wonder, when did the awakening of Elon truly start? Probably it started way before he became public about it. Doubting Thomas says, it may be overly optimistic, but the far left's aggressive anti-Israel position, all in the name of anti-colonialism and systems of oppression, may give the neoliberals in power pause when promoting these voices and ideas going forward. Oh yeah, I'm loving the current state of the world. Let me tell you, I feel totally relaxed because we don't have much role to play in the coming years for the world to crash. My friends, you can sit back with your popcorn. If you're an accelerationist who wants this world to crash because this world couldn't be fair to us, and so let it crumble. You don't have much to do in the next few years because a massive tension has been rising in the left on this one. And yes, what used to be very hard to engage with the left with was this whole subject of intellectual Jewry and their contribution to culture. But now it's going to be like surfing a wave. No effort, you just have to stand. Surfing USA. You have no effort to deploy the left, the pro-Muslims, just the quantity of people who are Muslims and Middle Eastern who are naturally sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. You know, you can chill. We can finally chill. We won't have to make the argument that Jewish control has some impact in the world. People will readily see it. And just out of the left's natural inclination to listen to minority suffering, they won't have any other choice but to recognize that, yes, you know, these people, these Middle Eastern people complaining about intellectual Jewry, they're brown. I have to listen to them. They're brown. And yes, it's like, it's about to happen. And I've seen this for years because even before my public life, there were lots of Middle Eastern people in the university. And you ended up automatically, just out of the statistics and probabilities, you're going to have a couple of friends. If you go to the universities, you're going to have a couple of friends and colleagues who are Middle Eastern. And let me tell you that back in the 9/11 days, like back in the days, they were the first to be on these conspiracy theories, to be totally based on the Jews. They were the first to bring these subjects to me. So I knew that there was a background laying dormant force in society. And I know that the Muslims are not the most eloquent at trying to defend this within civilization because they don't care. The Muslims generally don't care about convincing everyone. They talk about it a lot between themselves, though, let me tell you. And they talk about it in their religious group, within their ethnicity. And it's going to be so funny to see this dormant power just rise in society because it will reduce our efforts. It will make it easier for us. Amaranth is collabing with a beer company to brew a new flavor using our vaginal yeast. The bottled Desire, the Order of Yoni. So a beer that is brewed with the vaginal yeast of Amaranth. I will not live in the pod. I will not eat the crickets. I will not drink the vaginal yeast. Centuries from now, says Richard Spencer, the Zoomer cloud fights will be memorialized as enlightened dialectics. Just like the Greek philosophers. Or whatever, I don't know if they're Greek, but whatever these philosophers were, now we have the equivalent, streaming personalities, meeting, confronting each other. What is even happening here?
Kronikov?
What did I say?
I don't know. She said you was talking shit.
How? I don't know. I'm live stream.
Did you say something?
Go look at my live stream.
I don't got your live stream.
Then I'm sorry, you'll never know.
I don't know. Did you say something?
Do you think I said something?
That's what I heard. That's all I heard.
All right. And fine with me.
Who are these people? Why are they dressed that way? I have no clue. And what are they trying to communicate to each other? You said something, bro? I don't know. I don't know if I've said something. I have no clue what that all means.
Jack, do you say something?
Yeah.
You think I said something?
That's what I heard.
You called her an OnlyFans whore.
Damn. And then I said, I was like, wait, we got a lot of OnlyFans.
That's what I heard. Like, that's what I heard.
Like, there's a lot, but you have the million OnlyFans whores.
Do we?
You can't do that.
You definitely can't do that.
What do you have? Nothing. You're just a fucking leech friend.
Exactly. Okay.
Calm down.
Look at you guys.
Wait, who's your whole crew?
Right here.
No.
It ain't like
they doing. They're behind the camera.
And so now the insults are directed toward the crew. Where is your crew?
Corinna's lit.
She is lit.
Yeah, so don't talk. You can't talk shit.
I was not talking shit. It's more of a joke, but like.
Wait, I
call everyone an OnlyFans whore. We're all fucking OnlyFans whores.
Wait, you like to think though?
Fuck around. You can't take everything so seriously. We're live streaming. Like the fuck.
Yeah, I'm just saying. It's all good. Like, I understand. But you can't fucking talk that shit.
Well, she's making racks. She making racks.
Obviously.
Yeah, racks. Okay?
Racks.
So don't be throwing that shit out. Racks.
Man, listen, bro. What are we doing, bro?
What are we doing?
You made somebody upset.
What are you doing?
Why are you here? Hold on. What are we doing?
Hey, yo. We fight. Us two versus two. All right, go. I'm running.
No, I'm kidding.
What?
Bro, just dressing like this should be an offense to the crown. It makes me a monarchist again.
Hey, Chase. Go ahead. Walk.
You never started walking your way.
Hey, Chase.
Walk. I'm staying right here. I'm just saying, walk.
Okay, well, nothing is happening. I don't know why people have sent me this. Oh, we have a hooter whore.
You want to talk? Talk shit about me then.
Wait, yeah, even. I don't see you talking shit. Just because I'm at a party and I don't want to talk to you, you say that I'm just an OnlyFans whore.
That's not what it was.
That's literally what it was.
Okay, wait.
Okay, so this all started with him calling her a whore. Well, technically, just seeing the way you present your boobs and your legs, that would qualify as whorish. You're at a party, you don't want to be on a stream. I think she misinterprets that she got called a whore because she didn't want to be on a stream. Maybe you got called a whore because of the way you dress. Have you considered this?
I'm just saying,
walk. Wait, chill. No. Just back up. Just stop.
Oh, we have the big black guy who's in for a fight, but seeing how these people are dressed, this doesn't look like a party where fight should be arising. They look more like ridiculous cosplayers of the internet, the sexy version.
Just stop.
Oh my god. Just gave a punch to the totally defenseless gay guy.
Oh, fuck. Oh, no, yo, stop.
No, with you. Are you fucking crazy?
Hey, what's up? Hey, one by one, what's up?
What fucking security guard are you?
Fuck you, bitch, walk.
What kind of fucking security guard are you? Pretty much every security guard in the world. I don't know what to say. It's hard to have an opinion on all of this. If you go hanging out in these weird places, I guess it's one of the outcomes. Definition of genocide. Some people have been claiming by commenting on some of my past videos of the last week that I'm abusing the word genocide when I talk of what's happening in Palestine, that I'm participating to a mediatic context of exaggeration and metaphors and abuse of terms. I want to be clear. When I say that what's happening in Palestine is a genocide, what's happening in Gaza is a genocide, it's a genocide of the Muslims by the Jews. I don't mean it as something super hard to reach or as a... I don't see it as overdone at all. I think it's a proper description by the standard of the actual definition of genocide as we've been using it since 1948. And as I've been using it again and again in various contexts, I've talked of white genocide. I've talked of all sorts of genocide across the years. And I always go back to this definition. Article 2 of the convention defines genocide as any of the following acts. So not the five following acts, stacked together and performed to their end until no one is left alive. Any of these five acts is a genocide. And let me tell you, the thing you should conclude is that genocides are much more common than you believe. Okay? Genocides are happening right now in North America. And that is by the definition. Any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy. And so one thing that I've been insisting on all my life, and I've been insisting on when talking of white genocide, is we should totally abandon this idea that it needs an intent to destroy. Because people aren't fair at evaluating intent. See, we look at a war situation, we say, oh, no doubt Putin intended this. And then we look at another war situation and we say, oh, I'm not sure that Israel intended this. Or we look at the policies of our Western politicians, and we say, well, it does destroy white people, but I'm not sure it was intended to destroy white people. So because people hide their intent, they don't reveal them, and also because there are some things that are so obviously resulting in the destruction of certain people, like statistics reveal it, research reveal it, journals can publish even titles like white people are about to disappear. Because there are certain things that are very obvious, one cannot argue that they are not done intentionally. Like, you cannot argue that you are voting immigration laws unintentionally. Oh my God, I voted this law, but I did it unintentionally. There are things that are so obvious that we should totally label them as automatic intent, even if people don't say it's their intent. There's a reason they don't say it, and there's a reason why this criteria is here. So I've been arguing all my life that we should remove intent here, because intent is just used as a tool to modify, to insert a double standard where there should be none. But it doesn't matter, but in this particular instance, but I think generally it matters. Remove the word intent and see it says to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. So we can ask ourselves, is what Israel is doing in Gaza intentional? Yes, it is. Is it targeting a particular national, ethnic, racial, or religious groups? Absolutely. The Palestinians of Gaza, Muslims, if you want to see it from a religious perspective. But from a national perspective, the Palestinians of Gaza, an ethnicity, a racial group, and a religious group. So let's see if any of these standards have been met. Killing members of the group. Well, definitely. Definitely, Israel has currently killed. They are at a count between 4,000 and 6,000, something like this. And it's just the beginning. Killing members of the group has been performed by Israel, and therefore they meet criteria A, which is already sufficient to conclude that Israel is committing a genocide right now. But let's check through the list. B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Definitely, the Palestinians having to live with the bombarding of their residential neighborhoods by white phosphorus, the coming planes at all time, the incoming missiles. You can see terror, they express it, they film it. The Palestinian people are terrorized currently, and they are definitely undergoing serious bodily and mental harm. Even without the current bombardment, they were already going through this, as there are checkpoints that are operated by the Israelis. These checkpoints are subject to arbitrary killing, shooting for fun. We've seen plenty of videos. They are checkpoints that are meant to intimidate and give an opportunity for Israelis to kill more members of the group that the Palestinians are. So B has been met. C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. So, for example, the killing of children, the kidnapping of children that we've seen, and the killing of children. We've seen children being killed by bombs. That is one. That destroys the group because this is the future of the group. Those are the future Palestinians. They would be adult. They would grow up to make babies. So that's how you commit a genocide. It's by eliminating those people who could make the future babies of the group. We have seen kidnapping of children. Kidnapping of children is likely to result in these children being delayed or unable later in life to have babies. So reduction of the group number through kidnapping and imprisonment, and sometimes arbitrary imprisonment. The physical destruction of the group also relies on the physical destruction of their place of living right now. We are seeing the buildings of Gaza completely put down. We are seeing complete cities just in rumbles, in rubbles. And that is a way in which you can destroy a group. It's by completely making their place of living unviable. D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. I'm sure that there's plenty of actions of Israel that qualify here. For example, bombing an hospital. Bombing an hospital where there are pregnant women. But I don't know enough about the long history, but I'm sure there are lots of Israeli policies that are meant to reach this goal directly or indirectly. But certainly the bombing of an hospital would qualify under this current definition here. And E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. Well, we've seen it happen on camera here on the show. Israeli soldiers taking children on the street and assigning themselves to be their caretaker and bringing them toward the Israeli side. So you have all of the criteria for a genocide to be committed, and you have the definition that tells you if any of these criteria were met, we would have a genocide already. So no, I'm not trying to be superlative in my use of the word genocide. I'm trying to be accurate. And it's like, no, I'm not emotional about it. It's really, is the definition met? And you'll remember I had a discussion with ChatGPT on this, trying to get it to admit that there was a genocide of, I believe that it was white people that I was trying to convince ChatGPT of. And you can see that ChatGPT had a very hard time because it was forced to acknowledge that the criteria were met, but then it was always trying to wrap it up by saying, oh, well, but there's no genocide because... and it was finding various excuses for it. But eventually I had it say, okay, if you were to say it's a genocide, I couldn't really disagree with you. So you have to be very careful because these conventions were often designed by people who had intent to control the world and who had an intent to implement their double standards into how we process and how we judge of other nations. Obviously, these conventions are systematically being misused and abused by the powers that be, and often to justify their attacks against certain country and then and then apply a double standard when it's a country with whom they have an alliance. But we have to hold these definitions strongly. We have to press on these definitions because ultimately the leftists and the world dominators and the genociders, the warmongers, they all rely on a loose language and a strong respect of the value of language and proper semantics, and holding people to definitions is a very strong component of peace and of proper living. You give up a lot of political power when you abandon the English language. House weaponization panel gets IRS to end abusive surprise visits. Taibbi thanks Jim Jordan. So apparently there were abusive policy of surprise visits to taxpayers' home following pressure from the panel. We had seen the IRS agents were training basically to become like police agents. They would basically SWAT and all. It seems that they have put an end to at least a part of this craziness. This is an important point on the Israel-Gaza situation. Erdogan vows to get Israel branded as war criminal state. also blames the West for Gaza massacre. It's interesting what Turkey is going to do in this whole thing. Because Turkey is this NATO country, from what I understand. But that's sometimes and often has been kind of non-solidary to some of the positions of the US and the more Western nations. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. If already they are speaking against Israel, because you're going to have a lot of the past of the US that will come back to bite them. Because the US has been striking all these Middle Eastern countries for years without having to ask the permission to anyone, basically. And that creates a kind of a geopolitical precedent. Someone from NATO can decide, even in the total abjection of the UN, and very often the UN was telling America to stop, but but America was vetoing any resolution because they have this veto power in the UN. So you have a history here of America having done whatever they want in the Middle East. Now it might turn against them because you might have other NATO countries, maybe not in this particular conflict today, but eventually there's going to be a buildup of NATO countries that are reaching higher and higher proportion of Muslim inhabitants. The future of France, the future of Canada, may very well be the current state of Turkey. And so it's going to be interesting because there will be dissent within NATO and there will be a takeover of interests that are probably not so sympathetic to what Israel seems to be headed to do toward the Palestinian people. I think we need to look up to Turkey and what it does. Can Turkey suddenly try to attack Israel? Given the past behavior of Turkey, they often don't want to get in trouble. And they are mostly getting in trouble with proximate enemies of there. But it's very unlikely, in my view, that they will just start a whole conflict. However, in a scenario where there's lots of ganging against Israel, Turkey might be an important player, because I remember Semiyagog. Of course, Semiyagog is biased because I think he's from this country or something. Semiyagog is very biased because he was saying Turkey is one of the most equipped nation in terms of army, in terms of technology, of military. I don't know to which extent that's true, but it seems that it's a massive force, a massive military force. And to see them take the side against Israel might be very interesting. Animus Uprising sends a super chat. He says, "Hey, Jeff, we're glad you liked Beverly Lynn Smith series. What I found equally slimy was how they used the guy's wife's polygraph results against him, twisting her mind to believe their version of reality until she was insane in an asylum. And still wanting to use her for their case. Shameless." Oh my God, this woman. When I said I'm 50% sure the guy did the murder, what I didn't tell you is I'm actually, the other 50% is she may have done the crime. Oh my God, this unstable woman that goes from, "Oh yeah, I was in the room. It happened. He shot her," to, "I think I may have killed her. I think I may have shot her," to, "Oh yeah, I remember going to hide the gun after killing her into this parking lot and we buried it," to, "I didn't do anything. Sorry, I was wrong." Unbelievable. And on top of it, she doesn't pass the lie detector test. And so you're like, well, maybe she has something to hide, but what version of her story do I believe? And yeah, I think she may, given her total dissociation on this event, She is as much, if not more, of a suspect in my view than the guy ever was. Because she didn't pass the lie detector, just like the guy, but on top of it, she's been admitting it to the police in some weird ways. Like, I think I may have killed her. How do you reach that conclusion? If someone tells me, I think I may have killed her, what I record, what I hear is you did kill her. It's just that you have difficulty pulling it out of yourself, but you did kill her. Unbelievable. I was so frustrated at this woman during the documentary. The Mark D's channel says the only thing worse than a crazy person is a crazy person that implicates you in their deluded stories. Oh my God, it is so, so true. It's so painful. These disordered minds who are accusing others. I can't believe that our current legal system is believing these people. Hamas vows to release 8 Russian-Israeli hostages after talks in Moscow. We reported earlier that Hamas on Thursday sent a delegation to Moscow, a rarity, in order to engage with Russian diplomats on the Gaza-Israel crisis. The controversial meeting appeared to have borne fruit for the Kremlin side, particularly related to dual Russian citizens who are being held by Hamas among the more than 220 Israeli captives who haven't been heard from since October 7th. So I wouldn't be surprised that there was some negotiation. Perhaps Hamas needed some supplies. Perhaps Russia guaranteed those supplies, something like this. But I don't think that Hamas had a particular interest at keeping those Russians into the hostage bunch, because Russia isn't so hostile to the interest of Gaza, and there's nothing that they could really obtain from Russia other than supplies, weaponry, perhaps. Joel Surratt says, yo, Jeff, I saw A Beautiful Mind yesterday. Was it a good reflection of John Nash or not? Well, how would I know? I never got to know John Nash. It's an interesting movie to get into to get into the world of basically mathematical intelligence. That is a noble goal to pursue. Now, have they been properly pursuing it? You know, this whole region of his life where he was seeing basically Russian agents and thinking that he was decoding stuff for the Russians. And to what extent is that overdone in the movie? I don't know. I have no clue. Based Evolver says, I liked that movie and some parts are accurate, but it's supposed to be an emotional, gushy movie and it misses a lot. For example, the work of John von Neumann in Game Theory. John Nash wasn't working in a vacuum. Well, of course, he wasn't. I don't think that the movie aims at putting you into an academic reference movie where you understand the other thinkers around him. I think the goal of the movie is just to present you a beautiful mind. And that is met as a goal. Musk prepares to save Gaza's internet with Starlink development. Gaza is under bombardment and the internet is cut off. We demand that Starlink be activated in the Gaza Strip. Elon Musk, activate Starlink for Gaza. Starlink will support connectivity to internationally recognized aid organizations in Gaza. Well, that is... Elon is always... He's playing dangerous games. Like, Elon doesn't know how to stand clearly for a side. He was earlier siding with the American Empire, giving the means to the Ukrainian resistance to fight Russia. Now you are giving kind of half some help maybe to international aid organizations. But then we know how it goes. You know, the international aid organizations, some of their agents will be corrupt and they will, there will be a big market for them to pass on their Starlink receivers to, and some of them will end in the hands of Hamas. That's always how it is in humanitarian sectors. Either you have corrupt humanitarian locals in the poverty sector, or you have militaristic humanitarian corrupted agents who are redirecting in some form the humanitarian aid toward military goals. That is just the reality of the ground. If the whole of society is in poverty, then everyone needs that aid, and there starts being a market for theft for the aid. If everyone in this society is at war, there is a market for using that aid to the goals of war. So Elon Musk, you know, thinking that he will somehow administratively have control over, will it be humanitarian organizations or will it be Hamas? It won't happen. You will end up having some of your stuff used for Hamas purposes, which if he was doing intentionally, I would say that's kind of based, but it's going to be accidental. But Elon never knows how to position himself. Like, you have to choose an axis, Elon. You were on the other side of the axis in Ukraine. You were favoring the American Empire. Now you're favoring an enemy of the American Empire. You have to choose your side, Elon. This guy is too mellow, too soft on the inside. Time to think quadrillions, as there's zero fiscal restraint. This past week, I had the pleasure of interviewing blah, blah, blah. So they're talking about expansion, $2 trillion, federal budget deficit was $55 billion in 1983, and now it has risen to $2 trillion. So we will start having it in our language to need more than trillions, and we're going to start thinking about quadrillions. Very interesting. All very interesting for Bitcoin, because Bitcoin has been designed to recuperate some of the energy from that ridiculous rise. Pence pulls out of the presidential race. This will be our last news item for tonight. As Trump's lead widens, my God, look at this. Donald Trump in the green line. Donald Trump is dominating and he's barely appearing. Like, he's not on my radar. I don't see Trump videos popping out on social media. But he's rising and rising and rising. Despite being persecuted, they're doing everything they can to get him in trouble, to exhaust him. There was no role for Mike Pence here. Mike Pence has shown himself too weak for the job, too weak for everything. It was merely he had a role in the whole Trump thing, which was soften Trump, basically dilute the strength that Trump is displaying. But when you have that role, it may be a very good, you may be very good at doing it, but that would make you a terrible president also. Because he was just, he had a role in making Trump palatable to the religious fundamentalists and conservatives. So they can say, oh, okay, I don't agree with Trump's morals, but at least there's Cuck Pence beside him to supervise him, so I expect him to be on check, to be monitored. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you so much for being with me, and bear with me. I have taken many breaks in the last few weeks, and I might have to take still more breaks, but I am being very busy, and I don't always have inspiration. When I'm exhausted by work that I do all day and by even sometimes I'm like, what can I talk about tonight? There's nothing. And so I'll go at my rhythm and I'll keep coming here on the internet every time I have something to say. But 7 days a week, I may not be able to sustain that. I may need 1, 2 days of break, like most normal people, by the way. So it's not like I'm demanding too much from you guys. I'm demanding to be a normal person, maybe for a couple of months, and then I'll be back to full 7 days a week schedule, hopefully. But it's also a matter of, I don't want to come here and have really nothing to say. Nicholas Petris says, don't sweat the breaks. I don't know about this expression. What does it mean? Thank you.